Today we're going to be starting with some parasha by popular request. Again, if you don't want it, let me know and we can make some adjustments maybe. The end of the parasha discusses the inyan of Egla Arufa. And Egla Arufa is an anomalous parasha in the Torah. Normally we assume that all the different parashas in the Torah can be compared to each other, at least within Dinei Mamonos and Issur V'Heter and Tumah V'Tahara. Within each category, within Kadshim, you can make comparisons from one thing to the next. But Egla Arufa seems to be anomalous on many levels. You know, on the one hand, the idea of animal sacrifice is not really so strange. That's about 25% of Torah Shemachzad, is things relating to animal sacrifice. But this one is a strange one, because carbon, first of all, normally provides kapara. Egla Arufa, what was the crime that happened over here that led to Egla Arufa? It was murder. And the kapara certainly is not a kapara for the murder. The Torah is very explicit about that, that va'ata tivar hadam anaki bikirbecha, we still have to go, and we still have to take care of the murderer. We have to find the rotzeach, prosecute him to the full extent of the law. Not really mechaper for the rotzeach. So if it's mechaper for somebody, it's not for the crime. It's for something else. Second of all, karbanos are supposed to be brought in the Beis Hamikdash. Egla Arufa is taken to a place, Asher Lo Yizara, that's never been, to virgin soil, hard ground, not even where the person was killed, just wherever there's hard ground. We don't shecht it like a korban, we do arifa, which is the easiest way to make an animal, in a vela, which is not kosher l'mizbeach, typically, unless it's malika by an oaf. This is a very unusual thing to do with an animal that is a quasi-korban. And also, the people involved is very interesting. The Ziknei Ha'ir, I get, right? I mean, the Ziknei Ha'ir have to come because in some way they're responsible. In some way, they represent the city that didn't take proper care of the guest, of the person who was coming from the city. But the Torah tells us that the Kohanim, who really, they do avodah in the Beis HaMikdash, but they're involved in the process also. V'nikshu ha-kohanim b'nei Levi, kivam b'achar Hashem elokech l'sharso l'varech b'shem Hashem, v'al piyem yeh kol riv v'kol nega. So the kohanim, who typically are the Beis HaMikdash workers, have to show up to the Egla Arufa proceedings. So what exactly is the role of the kohanim by the Egla Arufa proceedings? So a lot of anomalous things over here. First of all, there's kapara, but the kapara seems to be a kapara, but the kapara is not for the real Aveira. Second of all, the idea that it's brought to virgin soil, and then we make it an Aveila instead of doing a Shechita. And third, that the Kohanim are involved. So I want to share with you for today just two simple ideas, two very basic approaches, and I think each one is an important message, but they're really independent of each other, although there is some overlap. The Ibn Ezra points out that the kapara, as we would have guessed, is not for the murderer. The murderer doesn't get kapara because we're going to bring an Egla Arufa. But it's for the tzibur that created an environment where murder can happen. That in a culture where something like that can happen, everyone is a little bit to blame. We may not be guilty of actually pulling the trigger, but we're all guilty of maybe insensitivity to violence, failure to take care of people, failure to look out for those people who maybe aren't otherwise being taken care of, a general lack of responsibility for our culture. That's how the Ibn Ezra understands is something that requires a kapara, that we have to be more responsible for those things that we tolerate and those things that we don't tolerate. And in light of that idea, we can understand the role of the Kohanim. I mean, the Kohanim are the ones that sort of set the tone of the ruchnius of the people. They set the mood, they set the values of the people. That's a Tosfos in Maseches Bava Basra. In the second paragraph of Maseches Bava Basra, the Gemara tells us that Rabbi Shua ben Gamla, Zachar Latov, because he was the one that came up with the idea of setting up Melamdei Tinokos B'chol Yir V'Yir V'chol Pelech U'Pelech. And that was his great contribution to Klal Yisrael, that according to the Torah, who's going to teach a child Torah? The father teaches the child Torah. That's what the Torah says. It's father's responsibility, no one else's. Comes along with Shulman Gamla, and he says, oh, but that's great. Mishe Yesh Lo Av, Melamdei Torah, Mishe Ein Lo Av, someone doesn't have a father, who's going to teach the kid Torah? We're just going to give up on a kid because he doesn't have a father, that he'll never be able to become a Talmud Chacham? So that can't be. So we came up with this idea that they would set up Malamdei Tinokos in Yerushalayim. And all you'd have to do is bring your kid to Yerushalayim, and they would learn in Yerushalayim, and then it wasn't the father's responsibility. Says the Gemara, still not such a great plan, because Mishiyesh Lo'av, to drive carpool to Yerushalayim, so he'll learn Torah. But if he doesn't have a father who could drive carpool, he doesn't have someone who could bring him to Yerushalayim, then he's still not going to learn Torah. So it's better, because the father doesn't have to know how to learn, he just doesn't know how to drive, right? He just, so it's better, it does broaden a little bit the field of children who are going to be able to learn, but it doesn't still solve the problem. There are children that Nebuch don't have fathers at all. They don't have anyone. Or the father is working very hard to be able to pay the tuition in Yerushalayim, and he doesn't have time to be able to schlep the kid to Yerushalayim. So the Gemara says, so in that case, they realized that wasn't going to work, so they set up Melamdei Tinokos B'chol Yervir B'chol Pelech Pelech. So the Tosfos and Baba Basra says, you know, like, what was the Hava Amina? Like, why Dafka in Yerushalayim? And Tosfos explains, you know, based on Ki Mitzion Tetzei Torah, that the Hava Amina was that in order to be mechanech children properly, they had to be in an environment where Luchnius was valued above everything else. They had to be in an environment where they would be able to see Kohanim Ba'avodasam, Tosfos says. And through that, they would be inspired to learn. Meaning, the culture in Yerushalayim was such where Ruchnius was the highest aspiration. And that culture was set by the Kohanim. I once heard many years ago Rav Rosenzweig Shlita speaking about choosing a school for one's children. And Rav Rosenzweig quoted this Tosos, and he said that above all else, I don't know if he said it exactly this way, probably not, but above all else, if the culture of the school is such that the frumest kid in the class is necessarily the biggest nerd or not the most popular kid in the class because he's frumer, so that's like weird, that's strange, that's not something other kids look up to, then that's a problem. If the culture is such that the kid who learns the best and learns the most and does the most chesed is the one who's most looked up to because that's what we admire, the culture is a culture of Yerushalayim, that's something that's worth taking into very, very heavy consideration. Sometimes people make these decisions based on, because I am very Zionistic, so if they say Halal Lidabrach and Yom Atzmut, that's the school for me, and if they don't say Halal Lidabrach and Yom Atzmut, then they're treif and whatever, and it's not school. And like we get caught up on like these, in general, there's a human, I'm going a little bit far off over here, but there's a human tendency sometimes to zero in on one issue and make these massive judgments based on one issue. And that is not a very healthy thing to do. And particularly when it comes to that, take a step back and appreciate the culture and see if that's a culture that you can live with. See if that's a culture that speaks to you, as opposed to saying, well, I have my boxes to check. Very often a guy will come to me who's dating, a Talmud will say, well, the girl doesn't, I always imagine my wife would do this and she doesn't, you know, I don't want to give examples because I'm going to get in trouble with every example, but and the answer is always, wait a second, you know, she's an entire person, that's a detail, but she's an entire person, so there may be some things that aren't exactly what you would have always imagined. You have to look at the entire person. You can't judge a person based on a single detail. And the Kohanim were responsible for setting that kind of culture, creating that Ruach HaTorah. And they have to see the failure that's represented by the Egla Rufa. The Egla Rufa was a failure of culture, according to the Ibn Ezra. And Rashi comments that the place of choice for the Egla Rufa is in Nachal Esan, and that the animal of choice is a baby calf. Why? Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Tavo Egla Bas Shnasa Shloas Saperos, take an animal that never produced any offspring, Vitarav B'makom She'eno Saperos, and let the Arifa happen in a place that doesn't produce any peros, L'chaper Al Harigasol Shalzeh Shloini Chu Lasos Peros, to be mechaper for this guy that wasn't able to produce a family because he was taken from the world at too young an age, too soon. The Medrash Rashi is quoting is highlighting the idea of the societal effect of the murder in a certain sense. It's not only about the crime, like eating chelev or dam, where you bring a carbon so you address the crime. No, it's looking bigger, looking at what could have been, right? What peros could have been produced. Not just the crime itself, the act of murder. And we demonstrate the power of potential and how that potential can best be met when we create the culture for potential to be realized. Maybe that's what one of the messages, and there are a million vartlach about this, but maybe that's one of the messages of why Yaakov chose to learn that with Yosef right before sending him on the most dangerous mission, right before sending him into the lion's den, so to speak, to his brothers, because he noticed a poisonous culture among his children. Yosef was a tzaddik, right? Well, they were all tzaddikim, but it's not enough to be tzaddik. We also have to be responsible for the culture that pervades our society, and for the mood that people are in, for what people are thinking about, what people are talking about, what's bothering people. And Yaakov realized that there's something that's not okay within the family dynamic over here. So he learns Eglah Rufa. Yes, you could say, I checked all the boxes, I did everything exactly right, I did all the mitzvos, all my chiyuvim, everything. Yeah, but there's something else. There's something beyond that. You know, but when the Rabbi Tzvi Ram told me yesterday, he saw in Aksavah Kabbalah, that in Parshas Shoftim and Parshas Mishpatim, the Torah records the Isser to take Shochad. And one time it says that Shochad is Ya'aver Enei, how does it say? Ya'aver Enei Chachamim. And the other time, Enei Pikchim. We saw the difference in both of them. Ya'aver Enei Chachamim. And you have any picture, Muslims between a chacham and a pikeach. So a chacham is someone who's a chacham who knows. He knows what pikeach is, sort of like that emotional intelligence. Someone who doesn't just know but gets it. The responsibility by Eglah Rufa is not only a responsibility of. What Eglah Rufa highlights for us is that our responsibilities are not only to do exactly what we're supposed to do, but to also really get the bigger picture. To understand how interactions are supposed to be, how values are supposed to be set, and how culture is supposed to be created. That's one idea. Second idea, I think, equally compelling approach, I saw it in a sefer called Ner Aharon. What's Ner Aharon? So Ner Aharon, there's a fellow whose children daven in my shul. His name is Ralph Frankel. And he gives Chumash Yurim, I think, in Brooklyn. I think he's moving to the Five Towns soon. And he gives lots of shiurim, I think. Works for a living, you know, balabas. But, you know, we believe that someone who's balabas, no heter not to become a Talmud Chacham. You got to be a Talmud Chacham anyway. Whether you're in smicha to go into Klei Kodesh. You have to be a Talmud Chacham if you do that too, by the way. But you have to be a Talmud Chacham no matter what. And this is a person who dedicates much of his life to Torah, and he wrote a beautiful two-volume sefer of ideas on the parsha. And he suggests, based on the Ramban in Parshas Maaseh, that Eretz Yisrael is unable to tolerate sin and misbehavior. In fact, the pasuk in Parshas Maaseh specifically addresses murder that happens in Eretz Yisrael, and it says, "Ula Eretz lo yuchupar l'adam asher shufach ba ki im bedam shofcho." The land becomes tame from serious averos, particularly averos like murder that are committed in it. And as a result of that, the Torah tells us, that you'll put a lot of seeds into the ground, you're not going to gather in very much. And we have to do an arifa in a makom kasha asher lo yizara, signifying that the land's refusal to produce peros, so to speak. Meaning, because of averos like this, there will be more land like this. Land that will not produce peros in Eretz Yisrael. We recognize that the land was afflicted because of our behavior. So the Eglah Rufa isn't mechaper for the murder, of course not. It's maybe not even mechaper for the community. It's mechaper for the land. That the land suffers when the Jewish people sin. And we bring the Eglah Rufa to address that. And maybe the Kohan and B'nai Levi specifically have to witness that, because they're not landowners. They're the only ones that wouldn't have first-hand knowledge of what's going on with the land, of whether the land is producing. Everyone else can see the Yad Hashem. They can see exactly whether the land is producing or not, because they have land to look at. The Kohanim do not. So they have to witness it, and they have to become part of the solution. you know, other lands might produce or fail to produce purely based on, you know, on expertise in farming and knowing how to till the soil or whatever it is that farmers do. But Eretz Yisrael relies on the Jewish people to serve the Ribbono Shel Olam in order to be fruitful. And we make sure that the Kohanim and B'nei Levi are there. Ki bam bachar Hashem Elokecha l'sharsel ulevarich b'shem Hashem. They're the ones who lead the way in serving Hashem, and they help us along with each other, and they help us get along with each other and overcome our own spiritual challenges. So the Kohanim have to be there specifically for that, to witness what it takes to get the land to produce, to receive bracha in Eretz Yisrael. And maybe that also addresses a little bit what Yaakov was trying to convey to Yosef. You know, in all the answers that you have about why Yaakov chose this to learn with Yosef, almost every answer comes with the idea that Yaakov had some sort of premonition. Right? We're not sure exactly what the Avos knew about the future and didn't know about the future, how much detail. You know, like Gemara Brachos about Leah knowing that there are going to be 12 Shvatim and when she was pregnant with number 7, realizing that, right? So exactly, is that a premonition? Is that like a Yediyah Berura? Like what exactly? But there was something. There was definitely a premonition that Yaakov had over here about something that Yosef needed to learn. Call it Ruach HaKodesh or whatever it was. And maybe he dafka wanted to learn before Yosef goes into Galus. Not to forget how special Eretz Yisrael is. Not to forget how connected the Gashmias and the Ruchnias are in Eretz Yisrael. In Chutz Laretz, there's Ruchnias, there's Gashmias, but they're not so bound up together. It's something Yaakov wants Yosef to remember, because he's going to achieve great material success ultimately in Chutz Laretz. But you should realize you haven't made it until you've made it in Eretz Yisrael. For a Jew hasn't made it until he's made it in Eretz Yisrael. My friend Corey Tarzik, Rabbi J.J. Schachter's son-in-law, remember years ago when they started the Center for the Jewish Future here in Yeshiva University, I was talking to him and he was telling me, so what do you think? Your father-in-law's moving back from Boston, whatever. So he said, it's very nice what they're trying to do. I can't stand the name. I said, why can't you stand the name? Such a lofty, you know, Center for the Jewish Future. He's like, you really think the Jewish Future is in Washington Heights? The Jewish Future is in Eretz Yisrael. We know exactly where we have. How many Nevi'im have to tell us where the Jewish Future is, right? We know exactly where the Jewish Future is. That's okay, interesting ha'ara, but we can't lose sight. When a Jew is in Galus, we can't lose sight of where a Jew is supposed to be and why a Jew is supposed to be there, because that's the makom where Kadosh Baruch Hu's eyes are more directly pointed. That's the place where the land itself speaks to us, where the land itself is going to tell us whether we're doing a job of Avodas Hashem or not. So two totally different messages. One about creating culture. I think in a yeshiva setting, and particularly as older guys in the yeshiva, I think it's an important idea. Sometimes there could be, again, I'm new here, I don't really get the whole feeling yet, but I can tell you, walking into the Beis Medrash, it's powerful when you walk into our Beis Medrash. It's a very powerful thing. And it's, you know, someone could say, I just learned in Shtibel somewhere. It's not the same. Like, you don't have that kind of experience. That's a cultural thing. And if you're learning Bahasmada, that has an effect on the Chavrusa next to you. And if you battle, that also has an effect on the Chavrusa next to you. Meaning it all interconnects. And, you know, and if, you know, there are some places where there's like a sense of negativity. You know, oh, it's always a controversy, always this. So someone stopped me yesterday. I was going shopping and someone said, oh, what do you say about this controversy that's going on? And like, I hadn't even heard of it because it didn't come to the back of the Beis Medrash yet. But, you know, like, I didn't even know. And I was just in a meeting with Rabbi Penner. He was telling me about it. I mean, he was talking as if I knew. I was like, uh-huh, yeah, sure. But, you know, like, and sometimes people can get overly negative. because of whatever else might be going on. And there's always something. There's always something going there. That's what happens when you have a place with energy and a lot of people and a lot of personalities. And there's always something to complain about. There's always something to get angry about, to get all fired up about. You know, but we have to remember we're responsible for the culture of the yeshiva, and part of that responsibility, or the largest part of the responsibility, is to learn Bahasmada and to be dedicated Avdei Hashem. And then that second message about as successful as we may be here, to remember that Eretz Yisrael is the place. That Eretz Yisrael is where the Ruchnius and the Gashmius come together in a much more complete way. Okay.